Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. We have six cases on our calendar today. Five are set for oral argument. This is the second of those five cases, and four of which are set for in person. The last one is set for Zoom. This is A22-0821 in the matter of the welfare of the children of JJF, the second, and MJB parents. Counsel for both parties, you will each have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, 15 minutes by appellant, and then 15 minutes by respondent. And then counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes after for rebuttal, if you so choose. We do have a couple of different setups for you. If you want to, you know, socially distance, you're free to use the microphone right next to you. We also have the microphone in the middle. The one in the middle, there is a button on the underneath side where you can lower and raise it, and you can also adjust the microphone itself. And there is a timer on there, so there is those advantages to that one. I'm joined here by my colleagues, Judge Randy Sleater and Judge Jennifer Frisch. We will be asking questions throughout the time as well. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record, the party you're representing, and if you have any preferred ways that you would like us to refer to either you or to your clients. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
I think counsel and I sat at the wrong tables. That is appellant's counsel over there.
Ah, okay.
Sorry about that.
Trying to throw us for a loop already. Please proceed.
May it please the court, Your Honor. My name is Victoria Herr, and I represent the appellant, JJF, in this matter. Your Honor, the basis for my client's appeal is threefold. One is a substantive and due process requirement for reasonable efforts to reunify him with his children. The second is that the district court did not afford my client an independent review of the case when it adopted the agency's findings verbatim. And lastly, the third consideration is best interest of the children to support the termination. In this particular case, Your Honor, as outlined in my brief, there was little reasonable efforts that were created. The county had four opportunities to meet and talk with my client prior to his in-custody status in December, to which they could talk with him about creating a case plan and identifying and outlining for him what services were needed for reunification. And the county simply did not. During those times, it was my client proactively reaching out to the agency to update them on what he's doing, the chemical dependency assessment that he has completed, his plan for treatment, where he was going to be. And each time, the only response from the agency was, well, let me know if you need assistance getting into a treatment facility. There was no other services rendered.
Counsel, I'm not sure if the record reflects that. I think the record does reflect that the agency did engage in efforts to try to contact appellant throughout the process. And there were times when he was just not available at all, sometimes for months at a time. So I'm not sure, and we have to view the record in the light most favorable to the district court's ultimate determination. So I realize that, I understand your arguments from your briefs, but I think we need to make sure we're approaching it from the right direction, though.
And Your Honor, we're not disputing that for the first 6 months, my client was having sporadic contact with the agency. We're not disputing that at all. But the contact that I'm talking about is outlined in page 13 of the appellant brief, in which there are four opportunities to which they could have had that opportunity to discuss and to case plan, and they did not. And then as
And counsel, before you go further, I just want to clarify one issue. You said at the beginning that there are three issues, and you said the first is the substantive and due process requirements to reunify
reasonable efforts.
Right. So is that argument really that the county did not engage in reasonable efforts to try to reunify father with children?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I would Yes, that is our argument, is that reasonable efforts were not utilized in a meaningful and real and realistic way to reunify my client with his children.
What would have been reasonable efforts in your view, counsel?
Reasonable efforts would have been to create a case plan with him, to create services around the issue that brought the case into child protection arena, and that was chemical dependency issue. There were no referrals that were made for chemical dependency that was made by the agency. There was no... Everything that my client did was on his own. He did the Rule 25 assessment. He tried to go to multiple placements. Even though after he was taken into custody, the county allowed him to sit in jail, knowing exactly where he was, for a month without meeting with him, without utilizing that opportunity to create a case plan for him.
But counsel, in terms of the case plan, there's the requirement to do it within a certain period of time. But my reading of the record, the county did try to meet with him. They were not able to. So in order to try to meet the deadlines, they met with the guardian ad litem and other parties to try to put a case plan together for father.
Well, you know, I know that there's the initial 30-day requirement, but case plans are subject to updates. Especially after the post-permanency review hearing, the agency has an ongoing obligation to update out-of-home placement plans.
Right. And the case plans were updated.
Mm-hmm. But not with my client's input. They didn't meet with my client to get his input on a case plan. They didn't put a case plan together for him. When they finally met with him a month after knowing exactly where to find him, a case plan was prepared for him. And essentially in that case plan, it outlines no services that he should be doing, no tasks that he should be completing for reunification purposes. And even though it authorizes visitation and contact with my client, no visitation was ever arranged and approved and authorized during the pendency of this case. And my client has actively engaged in chemical dependency treatment the last 6 months of the case. And he, you know, he's successfully completed from inpatient. He has successfully completed outpatient as of September. He's residing in the sober housing. He's employed. And at the time of trial, he has rehabilitated enough to where reunification was reasonably foreseeable, and reasonable foreseeable is within a 6 month time frame. And there is no justification for termination when the case plan does not offer any reunification services and does not facilitate reunification. When you're not allowing a parent to have any kind of contact with children after active engagement and treatment, which is what brought the case in, is sobriety, chemical dependency.
Ms. Hurd, can I ask you, did your client argue before the district court, as you are now before this court, that the court, the due process separate from the statutory requirement of reasonable efforts, was it specifically argued in that kind of two-part way as you're arguing today?
It was argued in our final closing, and it was argued during testimony at trial, but we did not have an opportunity to do or arguments for on the legal issues, but it was issues that were raised during the court proceedings and also in the final closing.
Can you help me understand then how separate they really are? Meaning, would you agree, for instance, if the court followed the proper statutory scheme and considered, although I understand your client disagrees with it and we'll review that, but if indeed the court's findings are not clearly erroneous and there's no abuse of discretion that reasonable efforts have been made, or if that's what we conclude, doesn't that naturally resolve the due process because that's the process that's due?
Well, Your Honor, that brings us to the second issue, right? We don't know that the district court has afforded my client the independent assessment of all of the issues and consider all of the issues that were presented before the district court. Because the district court adopted the county's findings in order verbatim.
So to that point, counsel, did the district court ask both parties to submit proposed findings of fact?
Yes, all of the parties were asked to submit proposed findings.
Okay, did both parties submit proposed findings?
Yes, I did on behalf of my client, and Mr. Smith did on behalf of the mother.
Okay, so neither party objected to that approach? Submitting proposed findings to the district court. Okay, and so the district court made a decision as to which way it was going to rule. So why is that error for the district court to use the proposed findings by the party with which it agrees?
Well, I believe that there's been case laws with respect to the district court adopting findings verbatim. I believe that even though parties are asked to do proposed orders, the district court has to take that as a template and put in its own findings and put in what it actually considered and did not consider. And in this particular case, the district court did not do anything in issuing its order to show that it had independently considered all of the evidence.
Well, I think the district, well, first of all, in terms of the case law, we are familiar, very familiar with that, but the case law actually says, the Minnesota Supreme has said that adopting proposed findings wholesale is disfavored, but it has never come out and said that is reversible error. And in fact, case law has said while it's disfavored, this court and the Supreme Court has affirmed decisions where district courts have done that. Second, in terms of the whether the findings were adopted wholesale without any changes, I don't think the record reflects that either. There were multiple changes, most of them minor, but one significant one in terms of one of the findings of fact that were made by the district court. And third, the district court held a 5-day trial. So the district court was there hearing all the testimony, all the evidence, all the exhibits that were submitted. And so I'm struggling to find how this is error by the district court when there actually have been changes to the proposed findings that the district court made, indicating that it did, in fact, carefully review those proposed findings before adopting them.
Well, you know, Your Honors, my client's position is that the district court did not make that apparent in its order when there's minor changes to the proposed order by the agency. And also that brings us to the best interest consideration to support a termination. And in this particular case, the facts did not support termination. It did not support termination because it was not in the best interest of the children to do so when at the time of trial, my client has reasonably rehabilitated to where reunification was foreseeable.
But the best interest, it's three factors. We look at the child's interest, the father's interest, and competing interests. And competing interests under that, one of the key ones is stability. And the district court did acknowledge that father loves his children and cares about them. But then the district court went on to talk about, you know, the importance of stability and the lack of stability that they have had when limited time that they have had with father in comparison to the stability that they have now. So how is that best interest analysis erroneous?
Well, Your Honors, in this particular case, it's a little strange in how a child protection case was opened because my client made a family arrangement with his sister, who is the foster provider in this case, in the proposed permanency placement option. And the agreement was that he would complete treatment, he would come back, and he would take care of the child. There was, at no time, did my client put his children's safety, well-being at risk when he was going to treatment. He had ensured that they were with a proper caretaker who was able to meet their day-to-day needs, who agreed to meet their day-to-day needs. And at the time this case opened, nothing has changed. The foster provider wasn't saying, I don't want to have these children anymore, and you need to open a child protection case and put them into foster care. It was just a secondary and perhaps financially more feasible way to get custody of these children.
Ms. Herr, I'm looking at finding 200 where the judge is referring to the guardian ad litem, I believe Ms. Cottrell, whom the court found credible. The guardian did testify there's no doubt both parents deeply love their children, and the children identify them as mother and father, but then went on to say, however, and referring to your client having a strong interest in maintaining the child, parent-child relationship, but at present his relationship with his children is extremely limited, primarily due to his own choice to remove himself from their lives for the first 8 months of this case, and then goes on to some other detail. Doesn't that satisfy in part one of the three factors, perhaps two of the three, as well as other evidence in there? What would make such findings as that clearly erroneous from this record?
Well, I think when we look at the case as a whole and the efforts that Mr. Fritz has made in trying to correct the conditions, even without a case plan that would outline all of the services and expectation, I think the key one was his sobriety. And he has made significant strive at the time of trial to reunify. And throughout the testimony and interaction, just testimony from both the guardian ad litem and the social worker involved in this case, is that even though they did not permit my client to have contact with his children, they love him. They remember him. Whenever they have a stressful moment, they don't ask for their aunt. They don't ask for their current foster provider. They ask for their daddy. And even though they're four, and they are not old enough to state a preference, the fact that the county has kept my client away from his children for the last half of the case, and they haven't seen him for a year, and they're that young, and they're asking for him in moments of distress, clearly indicates that the children want to preserve and want to have that relationship. And my client's efforts do not fall short of a parent who is trying his very best to address his chemical dependency, make changes in his life so that he could be present and he can preserve that parent-child relationship.
Thank you, Counselor. And you're actually over time, but I wanted to let you finish so there. So, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Allen. I'm an assistant Washington County attorney, and I represent Washington County Community Services in this proceeding. It is Washington County Community Services' belief that at trial, all necessary bases were proved to support a termination of Appellant Fritz's parental rights. Petitioner needs to prove a statutory basis, reasonable efforts, and best interests. Obviously, the focus of a lot of appellant's argument seems to fall around the reasonable efforts. In my brief, the best I could summarize it with her due process argument was a failure of reasonable efforts, and that's the way I approached it, and I think that is how everyone is kind of looking at it now. But I want to specifically address some of the statements by counsel with regard to community services efforts to engage the father in this case. As the court noted, this case was filed on July 28th of 2021. At that point, there was very limited contact with Mr. Fritz leading up to this case. There was a meeting with a social worker prior to even the filing the petition.
Counsel, I think that we are familiar with sort of the lead up to the actual contacts between the county and dad in this particular case. What I'm interested is your response to counsel's argument about the efforts that the county made to assist dad in obtaining successful treatment for his chemical dependency, which is really the reason why we're here.
I think that's one of the reasons why we're here.
It's a big reason.
It's a big part of it, yes.
So why don't you tell me about the county's efforts in that regard?
There have been two case plans put together in this case. The first one was not signed by Mr. Fritz. There's been a lot of discussion. He simply made himself not available. with regard to efforts to get him into treatment, he was essentially on runaround and warrant from the beginning of the case till his arrest in December, on December 7th of 2021. Thereafter, I think it's an important note, even before community services got involved, he was on probation for the felony domestic assault against the mother. Right. So we have two tracks of services running here. It is also a condition of his probation that he obtain a Rule 25 or a chemical health assessment and follow the recommendations. We especially spent till December in his arrest chasing appellant Fritz to try and engage. Once he's in custody on December 7th, Ms. Bovey, the social worker, meets with him in jail. In her brief, counsel talks about there's supposed to be this collaborative process, but then apparently complains in one session or over a phone call didn't complete a case plan. They met with him on December 27th. He is furloughed to chemical dependency treatment. That CDFL was put in place through his criminal probation. The reality is, are we supposed to make Mr. Fritz endlessly jump through hoops? We had a valid Rule 25 evaluation. Having him do another one, what purpose could that serve? The recommendation would have been the same, one would assume, which was residential treatment. That was a requirement of his case plan to obtain an appropriate chemical dependency evaluation and follow the recommendations. Were we supposed to make him do two separate chemical dependency treatment programs? Of course not. That would be just actually what the court talks about is not making people jump through endless hoops. We had to get to the crux of the problem, which was his chemical dependency treatment. That was arranged. Yes, it came out of the criminal proceeding, but it was entirely valid evaluation, and the program he was in, Transformation House, an entirely appropriate treatment facility. What else could community services have done?
Can I just clarify, Mr. Allen, then, if I understood correct, you're contradicting somewhat what Ms. Herr said, that he did it on his own, the point being it wasn't through the social worker, it was through the probation agent.
Correct.
To do the assessment and get into a treatment program, but the social worker was aware and of this process occurring.
Correct. As noted in the record, Ms. Heller, the probation officer, and Ms. Bovey spent the first 4 or 5 months of this case in contact with each other trying to figure out where Mr. Fritz was. Whoever got to him first was going to get the Rule 25 put in place. Obviously, the criminal system kind of trumps what we are able to do. He was in custody. A totally valid evaluation was put in place. There would be no basis for community services. In fact, it'd be inappropriate in my mind for community services to say, no, you have to do another one. So there were those efforts. There was the CD evaluation. Almost immediately, once he's in custody, things that were not part of probation were actively taken on by community services. As noted in the record, you need a period of sobriety before you can do a psychological evaluation so the results are valid. As you note, he is out of jail, furloughed to treatment on January 3rd. On January 19th, he is personally driven by the social worker to obtain that psychological evaluation. Further steps back, due to the behaviors of the children, even before Mr. Fritz was found, community services provided efforts to the family for the children to obtain mental health evaluations, which resulted in their rather significant diagnosis of suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, as noted in the record and found credible by the court, specifically related to the neglect suffered at the hands of their parents over the course of their very short lives. In that same month of January, within 1 month of him being out, Ms. Bovey was working to get release of information so the appellant could begin working with the children's therapist. So there was lots of things going on outside just this chemical health area. And counsel wants to focus on the chemical health. At the time we got to trial, almost 10 months into the case, he completed 90 days of treatment. And he successfully completed that. Community services does not dispute that. It also noted he was just moving into a sober house at the time of trial, just initiating the second portion of his treatment. And he had a job, got a different job, had no place that he could reside with the child. So we were at a stage, what could be done, and when is the right time to reunify with the children? I think it's important to note this isn't a case community services made a decision to keep these children away from appellant. Community services was following the recommendations of the mental health professional who was treating the children. As found by the court, and the testimony of Ms. Olson, the children's therapist, was specifically found credible by the court, She put forth a plan that related to the trauma suffered by the children, which resulted in their post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis. The factors noted all relate to the parents, including Mr. Fritz, including parents coming and going, parents' drug use, domestic violence in front of the children, and there's kind of the chronic lack of stability that whenever these children appeared to have been in appellant's care, they tended to be exposed to. A plan was put in place. As noted and found by the court, any progress by by appellant was very slow and sporadic, in honesty relating, as found by the court, to his own antisocial personality disorder diagnosis, which makes it very difficult to engage in any type of therapeutic treatment.
And that's from the psych eval you're referring to, his diagnosis of antisocial
personality disorder. Correct. It was completed by Dr. Hall in January, received by community services on February 14th, I believe it was. Within weeks, community services attempted to go over that evaluation with appellant. As one might say, is typical with his diagnosis, he did not agree with any of it. He clearly had no understanding of the strong concerns expressed by the mental health professional about concerns of violence, his refusal to even acknowledge it happened. All those things add into a need for the process, the deliberative process put in place by the children's therapist working to reunify.
So after Dad completes treatment, does he refuse to go? Just remind me of the record here. Does he refuse to go to any other services that were provided by the county? Did the county provide additional services after that particular time?
Outside of chemical dependency?
Outside of chemical dependency?
Yes, he was engaged with Ms. Olson, the children's therapist, initiated what's called the Circles of Security program.
And is he succeeding in following through with the county's recommendations after he's completed treatment?
Yep. When the case ends, our work with Mr. Fritz ends.
Right, up to the time of
trial. He had been to two individual therapy sessions.
Yeah.
He, in the leading up to the trial, he had made, I'll be careful to stay in the record, approximately half of the initial sessions for Circle of Security. He struggled to get there and make progress in them.
Here's why I'm asking the question, counsel. So it seems that the crux of the problem with Dad is really embedded in his chemical dependency issues, which is understandable. And that sort of bleeds into some of the other issues that led to the issues that were causing trauma for the children. And if he goes to treatment and he completes treatment and he's on an upward trajectory where he is succeeding by at least availing himself of the services that the county has provided, at least through trial, don't we have a situation where we're really looking at the district court maybe making a decision too early to terminate his parental rights and not giving him enough time to make use of the county's additional programs or have the county make additional reasonable efforts to reunify the children given that he's succeeding?
Well, I guess
that's my concern.
I understand that, and I want to say succeeding for 90 days. I mean, we have a case that was. I don't think it's appropriate to forget about the first 6 months.
I'm not discounting the fact that there were problems leading up to the time that he actually gets into completes treatment. Right. So we've got problems. He finally gets into treatment. He succeeds in treatment. He's got a little bit of time before the trial. Don't we have an issue about whether he should have more time?
And I think court is getting to the reasonably foreseeable future part. And there is this internal tension, as been noted by recent cases. How long do you let kids linger in foster care? Community services has to balance the parents' rights and the child's rights. That's kind of the best interest part we haven't gotten to yet.
And again, this isn't any old foster care. This is a relative, right?
Correct. And also, counsel said this case came in. Lots of cases come in. A child gets left with a relative, and eventually a relative says, "This isn't working. I need help," and they call community service. There's nothing odd about this. But that leads to, if it's a relative, I guess we just never end these cases? There has to be an end point. At some point, a decision needs to be looked at. What is the likelihood that all the things that need to get done can be done in the reasonably foreseeable future?
And was that analysis done?
Yes, I think it was laid out in the court's findings with regard to best interests. Certainly, even before that, I believe there's a lot of conversation by the court in the findings that because, and I don't want to talk too much, Christy, this is the third time through the child protection system for these children. The same services have, the chemical dependency issue has reared itself three times. Yes, chemical dependency is a terrible disease, difficult to get over, but I think what we're finding is these underlying mental health issues that Mr. Frist does not want to deal with is actually a very big driver of the chaos, his inability to manage his emotions, all those things that are also necessary to parent. He's been through parenting education. He never internalized, clearly by this new case being opened, all the skills he had the opportunity to learn in the last two child protection cases. The therapist indicated if everything went perfect for Mr. Fritz, it would have taken him 2 more months to get through the circles of security, then 5 to 7 months to do the individual therapy before he could even get to working with the children. And that is assuming everything else went right. And the court noted, based on his anti-personality disorder diagnosis, he is not a good candidate to do this kind of work. He doesn't see there's anything wrong with himself. He does not accept social norms. He is unable to regulate his emotions. As noted by Ms. Olson, the therapist, when he was in therapist working in the circles of security, all appellant wanted to talk about was himself and his problems. I think it's similarly also noted in testimony by Ms. Bovey and the guardian ad litem, at no time during the course of this case did appellant ever bother to call them to check in how his children were doing. So while the CD issue might be taken care of in a very, at this point, highly structured and controlled environment, his history is when he's out of that unstructured environment. By that, I'm referring to the time leading up to the filing of this case, when he moved out of the structure of his father's home, by his own acknowledgement, relapsed, all those months of neglect of the children, before essentially he got arrested. He didn't just call his sister for help. He got arrested. He needed someplace for his children to go. And yes, his sister did take on that role. She's actually provided more cares to his children than he has, or it's darn near even certainly more than the mother has provided cares to these children. There is, as the court specifically found, there is no reason to believe in the reasonably foreseeable future. Everything that needs to go right can go right in this case. Part of that is based on history. He's never been able to maintain sobriety outside of a very highly structured environment. This is one of those cases, the children need permanency. That is specifically was addressed in the therapist's testimony, which was credited by the court, that these kids can't have more disruptions. Their post-traumatic distress disorder diagnosis is incredibly serious, can lead to lifelong problems if not treated. They need caregivers that can meet those needs. As noted, the foster parent made 32 of 32 sessions working with these children. Appellant missed half of the first four of seven, I don't remember the right numbers. You're just looking at what's the likelihood of all that suddenly going well? Because that was while he was sobered in treatment with no other responsibilities. He was in treatment. He had to get on a Zoom to deal with this therapy. He couldn't even manage that. It's much more than just a sobriety that these children need.
Thank you, counsel. Looks like there are no other questions.
Thank you. So,
counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I'd like to address the Dr. Hall's psychological assessment. Let it be known, and as it was testified to at trial, the social worker did drive my client to that assessment, but the social worker did not pick him up. The social worker arranged for pickup way too early. The assessment was not completed. Dr. Hall testified to that. He testified that he relied on information that was not my client's information in writing his report.
Weren't there two assessments that were done? There was Dr. Hall, and wasn't there an assessment by another doctor who diagnosed him with antisocial personality disorder as well?
The assessment for this case, there was only Dr. Hall. I'm not aware of any other assessment that was done psychological related to this case. Dr. Hall's assessment, and he also testified that he had no information about my client's parenting and all of the opinions that he rendered about that was based on speculation. That was admitted to on the record during trial. With respect to the children's therapist diagnosis, the standard of practice is that you don't use the DSM-5 standard to diagnose children that young. the therapist testified that she did use the DMSM-5 to make that diagnosis, and the reason why she did that is for insurance purposes. Insurance would not pay if those criteria were not met. So there is serious questions about the validity of the children's mental health diagnosis. With respect to the Rule 25, for the first 7 months, my client had periodic contact. He was making an arrangement. He was doing those Rule 25 on his own. At that point, probation was not involved. And so later on, it was probation, and he was arrested, and he did that. But all of the prior treatment places that he was trying to go into and all of those Rule 25 assessment, he did on his own.
Time that he was non-responsive and not providing to the county's efforts and contact efforts and where he had a new number? It was before that, right?
Yep, it was before that. There were four occasions that he checked in with the social worker. He let them know, hey, I did the Rule 25. I'm going into treatment. This is where I'm going to be.
Right. But did he complete any of those?
He completed the Rule 25. He entered into treatment, but there were an open warrant and an active warrant, and so he was turned away from the treatment provider saying, you need to go and take care of this. And this was when he was taken into custody in December.
But didn't he leave another one as well when he tried to enter on his own?
I don't know that he left on his own accord or if there were other logistic issues that caused him to leave.
So the only one that he entered into that he actually completed was the one that had been ordered from the court.
From probation, yes.
Correct.
When he was arrested.
And that was one that they coordinated with the social worker.
I don't know if there was coordination. Obviously,
the record reflects that there was communication between the two to make sure. Because the social worker was trying to find, during this whole time, the social worker was trying to find out where he was.
Yep.
Okay.
And I would not dispute that, Your Honor. And then with respect to the children's therapist testimony, even though she testified that it would take many months, 5-6 months, she discharged my client 3 weeks after the trial. My client completed the circle of security, which is the parenting class with the therapist, and after 3 weeks, 3 weeks after trial, she said, you're completed with this, there's nothing else I could do for you, and discharged him from services. So she didn't take 5 or 6 months to work with my client. She refused to work with my client. And so my client wasn't agreeable. He completed treatment. He was doing the assessment. He disputed the validity of the assessment by Dr. Hall because he never completed all of the testing. And Dr. Hall testified he relied on information that was not my client's record.
The record does reflect that he only made about half of them, and those were just by Zoom. He didn't have to actually attend those in person, correct?
What there?
Of the circle.
The children.
Because
of the pandemic, a lot of those sessions were by Zoom, and it was through failure. He missed a couple of them, but it was not due to his fault. It was due to Transformation House having internet issue, and he notified
for,
the
for
therapist.
All those? Because he
for
missed
the
about
two
half
that
of them.
He missed, yes.
I thought he missed more than that. I thought there were more than that that he... So there were two that he missed, so there were only four that were scheduled?
At that time, they were only starting with that process. So it was pretty early on. But I'm aware that he missed two, and both of them were due to internet and connectivity issue, and that he did notify, as well as the facility did notify the therapist as to why he was missing.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Looks like there aren't any other questions. Thank you both, counsel. It was very well argued and very well briefed as well. We appreciate that. We will be issuing an order, and this is an expedited case because it is a child protection. It involves welfare of children, I should say. So we will be issuing an opinion within, I believe it's the 45-day period. Thank you both.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.